listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Hey guys, Charlie here. Before we get into this week's ep, a little bit of housekeeping. Just want to let you know about two things. Now, the first thing is that FOFOP is moving to Fridays. New episodes every Friday from here on out. Why? Because we think it makes more sense. Friday, FOFOP, it's the F thing, you get it. The other thing is that we're consolidating. We want to make it even easier for you. So we know a lot of FOFOPers listen to TOFOP, so we're going to put them all in one place. That's right. From May, the only place to get FOFOP will be via the TOFOP feed. Two shows, one place. It's never been easier to get TOFOP and FOFOP. So on the odd chance you don't follow TOFOP, just go to that feed, make sure you hit follow, and you won't miss any FOFOPs. And that's it. Let's get on with the episode. Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson and my guest this week is a TV and radio producer. She's also a dating advice columnist, Jana Hocking. Welcome to FOFOP.
Thanks for having me on. Long time listener, first time guest.
Well, it has been a long time and it's funny because I've been meaning to get you on for a while. And when I finally found the time to do it, I was like, oh, well, I wonder if I've got Jana's number in my phone. And so I put your name into my contact list and I don't have your number, but what I did have was a message from a mutual friend of ours, Cassie. And this is from 2015 and it says, you have to have Jana on your podcast. We've decided. So here we are 8 years later. It finally happened.
Well, it took you a while.
Yeah, I'm very slow. I'm sorry about that. It takes me a while to get around to it. But it is so great to have you on because I'm a big fan of what you do, especially, and I know that, you know, this has sort of caught fire in the last couple of years, but your saucy confessions on a Monday.
Oh, my God.
That has got me so gripped. And, like, I know a lot of people have questions and you probably get sick of answering them, but, like, where did the idea come from? And then how does the editing process go?
Oh my God, it's insane. So yeah, on my Instagram every Monday night, well, on Sundays, I throw out a question to everyone on my Instagram and say, tell me your saucy secrets.
By the way, and you're bringing saucy back. Have not heard saucy since like 1970s British sitcoms. So well done.
I don't even know why I picked saucy. But I wanted them to be a bit sexy, a bit scandalous. So I, throw it out on my Instagram. I was really, really bored on a Sunday. And I thought, and I had seen someone do, like, you know how everyone does those ask me a question kind of things. And I find them a little bit narcissistic. So I was like, no, tell me a secret. So throw it out there. And I was overwhelmed because everyone wants to tell secrets. And if you can assure that they'll be anonymous, then people feel a little bit more open to sharing.
Oh my God. Talk about feeling open to share. Some of the stuff that you get sent, I'm like, whoa.
Wild.
Like,
wild. I get asked all the time. They're like, are they real or are you making them up? I'm like, every single one I post is real.
How do you know though? How do you know
that? Because, well, sometimes, okay, that's a good point because sometimes they're so crazy and I can't say who sends them because it's an anonymous link. So when people submit their secrets, it comes up on this little app on my phone and it's just a love heart envelope and you hit the envelope and it's wild what these people are telling me. And then I reshare it on my Instagram with a photo that I pick.
Which is great, sorry, because that little element too is your little commentary and that's what makes it so great because I always look forward to what GIF or what image. And sometimes I don't know what you're referencing when you'll post something, to sort of underscore or play bass on one of these confessions. I'm like, what is that reference? And then I'm like, oh, okay, sure. You definitely shouldn't be putting that there.
Yeah, sometimes if they're talking about like blowjobs or very kinky bedroom things I've got up to, I go quite arty.
Yeah.
So I don't think I go crude, but I'll find an arty picture of like a grapefruit that perhaps represents a girl's anatomy. But that's half the fun. I love getting the secrets, and then I'll spend all Sunday afternoon or all Monday night looking for pictures to go with the stories. And it's really fun. So it started with me just saying, throw a secret my way and I'll share it. And then I think people got spurred on by other people sharing secrets. And what I've learned is everyone is having an affair. Yes. Everyone is in a threesome at the moment. Like, these stories are wild, and man, you just can't trust anybody.
It does. I had that exact same thought. I'm like, my life is so vanilla and boring by comparison. But also, like, you know, you think about, like, you know, David Lynch movies, the sort of thing that typifies them is he loves to show kind of the ordinary life, and then the camera lowers down and you see the seedy underbelly of like suburbia and whatever.
That's what we're seeing.
And that's what you're seeing. And it's interesting too, like that need to share. Like there's a Twitter account that does a similar thing called Fesshole. I'm not sure if you're aware of it.
No.
And it's a similar thing. It's anonymous. People just post anonymous kind of Twitter confessions. And it's like there's this weird need, I don't know if it's a pride or it's a guilt thing of people wanting to share these secrets. I was raised Catholic, so I'm very, very familiar with the art of confession. But when I did it, I was always like, I hated going to the confessional. I mean, there's a lot of things to hate about the Catholic Church, let's be honest. But, you know, as a kid, it seemed like such a bizarre, you know, sacrament, a bizarre request. They're like, okay, you're going to go into this dark booth with this, you know, older man, and you're going to have to tell him your deepest, darker secrets and beg for forgiveness. And even as like an 8-year-old, I'm like, that's creepy and fucked up. There's a power dynamic that is wrong. And so I used to just make up stuff because I didn't want to share my actual 8-year-old deep, dark secret. So I would go in with the most kind of milquetoast, you know, banal, like, you know, transgressions, hope, and would get forgiveness. You know, I mean, if God is real, then I'm fucked because I was lying. I was lying, but not confessing the lie. But then I know, like, other Catholics who got real kind of relief from doing it, you know, and maybe this was in an era before, like, counselors and therapy and all that kind of stuff. But it must be something, right? There must be some psychological benefit to it.
It has to be cathartic. And one thing I learned is like we girls share everything. Boys don't. So now they've got this, you know, confessional through my Instagram where they can be like, oh my God, I've been dying to tell someone that I had sex with my boss's wife and now I'm the father of one of their kids. Like, that one was wild. And I love everyone's commentary in my DMs when I post things and they're like, oh my God, that's so messed up and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's a real outlet for people, especially anyone that's having an affair, because you can't go tell your friends or, you know, you can't tell anyone, but here they can kind of go, they can tell me and I share it with the world with a funny picture. So.
Yeah, it's funny too. Like I would love, I mean, it's probably impossible to do, but if there was like if you could do some kind of anonymous follow-up and see where, so just say, take, for example, the guy having an affair with his, you know, his boss's wife or whatever, like where that goes, like, because I think, you know, when we do something wrong or there is like an illicit affair or something, there is like that dopamine hit in the moment, you know, it's either the physical pleasure or the excitement of getting away with something or whatever. But then what are the long-term outcomes for these things?
Because that's what I want to hear.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was probably not as salacious or as interesting. Doesn't make for a snappy Instagram story, you know.
Well, sometimes it is, and then the boss found out and burnt down his house.
Yeah.
You know, I want to hear those stories.
But it does sort of come back to that idea of, you know, and again, it's a very Catholic thing for me, from my perspective, is like, well, what are the consequences of these things? Like, I remember growing up, you know, my mother was always very big on, you know, trying to sort of see things from someone else's point of view, or, you know, giving the benefit of the doubt and all this kind of stuff. And so I think there's benefits and drawbacks to that. So I do find myself but trying to be quite compassionate to other people and stuff. But then sometimes you can get taken advantage of because you give too much to other people. And then conversely, when you have a chance to get, you know, like satisfaction or pleasure or something like that, there is this like guilt associated with it. It's like, have I earned this? Like my wife, Jem, is really good at just like, no, I just reward myself. I don't have to have a reason for it. You know, if something feels good, it doesn't hurt someone else, then I'm just going to go for it. You know, why do I have, whereas I have this thing of, well, you need to earn reward. You've got to sort of go through some kind of like punishment, or there's got to be some kind of hard work before you can enjoy reward. I get very uncomfortable with just, you know, pleasure for pleasure's sake.
That's very Catholic.
That's my confession. I should have.
That's a good confession. I'm already thinking, what picture can I put with that? I'll do like the brain explosion. No, I think I'm like, Jem, I just, because I seek it. Like I seek that reward, whether it's for nothing, like, you know, with this Saucy Secret Mondays, I seeked it because I was so bored on a Monday night. I get a lot of kickbacks because everyone goes, can you post them after maths? I'm trying to watch maths. So I used to post them at 7:30, and then I realized I got better engagement at 8:30 after everyone had watched maths.
And they're in that kind of frame of mind for scandal.
Totally. They're like, they want their next fix of someone cheating or confessing to being pegged. I find out I've learned so
Don't
much.
Just tuck that away at the end of the sentence. Anyway, moving on. Just got confessed to being
the pegging.
Pegged. Yeah.
I didn't know what pegging was until someone confessed it. I have to Google. When I get the secrets, I have to sometimes Google what they're talking about. And, oh, someone put something pretty rank on there the other day. And I was like, what is he talking about? And I throw it up there. And then I got all these DMs, people explaining to me what, I don't know, how loose can I go?
Go loose. It's fine.
Oh, good. Okay. So someone said to me, because there's a lot of secrets I can't post and there's a lot of creepy messages I get. But one guy goes, I use my pocket pussy when I look at your pictures. I've never heard of that before in my life. So I put it on my Instagram. I'm like, what's a pocket pussy? That sounds disgusting. And then I got everyone sending me these links and Google searches. And it's like, and then I got in trouble because I found out what it was. It's basically a kind of like a male vibrator, yeah. Right? Like it's a, yeah. Anyway, you all get the idea. And so then I reposted. I went, ew, that's disgusting. And then I had to check myself because I got all these guys messaging me going, why are you shaming a guy for using a male sex toy? Women feel no shame over using vibrators. And then I was like, you're so right. I fully shamed him. But, like, I'm shaming him because he said he uses it over my pictures.
Yeah.
That's gross.
There is there is context around that. I mean, you ask, is that an okay conversation to bring up in this podcast? In the early days of Tofop and Fofop, Fleshlight came many a time to see if they could sponsor this podcast. Are you familiar with what a Fleshlight is?
Okay. I am now.
Now you are now.
I am now.
And we had, like, Will and I, we had serious discussions about it because, you know, we had no kind of sponsorship. I'm like, well, do we want to be the Fleshlight podcast? And I have no issue with people who want to use Fleshlights, but I just didn't know if it was great. You know, Will has an ABC contract. I'm not sure that fits with their charter.
You got to think about that. And I remember when Abby Chatfield first, she did a big paid sponsorship with a vibrator company. And I was like, oh my God, does that girl ever want a full-time job again? Like people are going to look at her pictures on a Google search and say, oh my God, she's waving around a vibrator. And I was quite judgmental on that. And then she paid off her house in Byron Bay and they sold out of the vibrators she was spooking. And I went, wow. And I think about it completely differently now. I'm like, I mean, she backed it 100%. And I still don't think I could wave around a vibrator on my Instagram and be like, buy this. But, you know, I do a Moments Condoms sponsorship and I never would have done that a few years ago, but I think there's so much positive talk on sex and, you know, embracing our sexuality and stuff that now I feel comfortable to do that. But we've come a long way.
Even in the last 10 years, like I sort of feel like, you know, as an actor, I've been working on shows recently and every good show has like an intimacy coordinator, an intimacy advisor, you know, which is so huge because, you know, especially if it's like you're doing, it doesn't even have to be like a lovemaking scene. It can just be a kissing scene, anything where there's sort of physical contact can be really intimidating, especially for like young actors. And it's funny because you've got that sort of care and consideration on one hand, and then you have this sort of like body positivity on the other where every girl on the beach wears a G-string bikini now. And that happened so fast. Like I just was like, all of a sudden there's ass cheeks everywhere. And I live in the Northern Rivers near Byron. And it's like, that's just par for the course. And it's really like, I know I'm middle-aged now because it sort of takes me back, especially when you see it away from the beach. Like I do love going onto the Byron Bay Facebook forum because it's a den of scum and villainy. It just descends into chaos within minutes of a, like, can be the most innocuous post and then there's 1,000 comments of people just arguing. And there was a hilarious post where a woman said, you know, all these girls coming off the beach and going into Woolies, can you please put on a sarong or a dress? I don't need to see your butt cheeks as you're bending over to pick up your cans of corn. And it was just, and it just sparked this huge debate. But there was this clear generational divide between, you know, people probably my age and up who are like, oh, come on, like, we get it. You're body positivity and we're all for that. But, like, there's a time and a place. And then the younger generation who are like, fuck you. Who are you going to tell me what to wear? Like, if I want to wear a G-string, I'll wear a G-string. And then you can't really dispute that. Like, a town like Byron has had dudes walking around barefoot and shirtless in Woolies for decades. Mm-hmm. And so now girls are showing flesh. Like, is it really the hill you want to die on?
Oh my God, it's such a hard one because I'm a little bit on both sides of the fence. Because, yeah, I don't want to go into Woolworths to buy my frozen chicken nuggets and see your ass. Yeah.
See someone else's nuggets.
Yeah, I don't see your nuggets. But I think I've got so much to learn every week. Like, my mum refuses to read my articles. My brother has blocked me on Instagram because of my saucy secret Mondays, because there's still of that, no, this is too much. Women don't talk like this. Women don't talk about enjoying sex or, you know, their body hang-ups or things like that. They find it way too confronting. And I'm not going to, and you're right, I'm not going to die on that hill because that's just how they think.
Yeah.
But I know there's a big audience who we're all kind of coming around to that side of things and being like, no, it's really interesting. And it's the chats we have at a boozy brunch. Like when I kept getting saucy secrets that were saying, oh, I had a threesome with this person. Oh, I had a threesome with that person. And so I put it to my friends at brunch on Saturday. I was like, is everyone having threesomes? Because I've never had one. And every girl at that table was like, oh, I've had one. Oh, I had one at uni. I had one here. And I was like, well, what's the difference between talking about it here and writing an article about it or talking about it on Instagram? Yeah, I just think times are changing and it's hard to keep up.
Well, you also don't want to be that person who stands in the way of like, well, I don't want to be that person who stands in the way of like societal progress, even if I don't get it. It's like music. You know, like I stopped listening to new music about 15 years ago. Doesn't mean I don't like new music. It's just not for me. But whatever kids want to do and talk about. And, you know, I sort of find it the height of arrogance that sort of, you know, that kind of okay boomer thing, even filtering down to Gen X like me, you know, this idea that we had it sorted out and you're just idiots and you don't know what you're talking about. Like, do we have no concept of history? The fact that the new generation comes up, they present ideas that the established generation don't like or think are dumb or whatever, and then they get overrun. So I am not so foolish to sort of stand in the way of progress and think that, you know, my generation's ideas and the way we dressed and all that kind of stuff is the way it should be forever. And I get excited, like, when I talk to, you know, teenagers and stuff, friends of mine's kids or, you know, people I work with, and their sense of who they are, you know, the self-confidence, all that kind of stuff is streets ahead of when I was their age. I mean, of course, there is the downside of social media and that's a whole other, you know, kettle of fish. I can't imagine what it must have been like to be a teenager when, you know, bullying happens not only, you know, in person, but then you can't escape it. It's everywhere, every time you open a device. But I do think that, you know, there is like real benefit to to what kids are coming up with now and the demands they are making. Like, everyone sort of makes fun of, oh, they need safe spaces. And they don't. Yeah, fucking good. Like, we should be looking to make the world safer and less threatening and give people more safe spaces, not a derogatory term, for our kids and, like, the next generation. I don't understand this idea of they need to toughen up. Like, we stopped sending kids into factories and coal mines after the Industrial Revolution. That was a good thing. Like, you know, it's this so idea true. That our kids need to, like, be sent into the army or toughen up. Fuck that. No way. Like, yeah. We should be endeavoring to make things easier for the next generation.
Oh, my God. Even the, you know, the way in schools now they're teaching them about emotional maturity, or you go on TikTok, or I call it the TikTok just to annoy my young friends. Like, I go on the TikTok. And there's all these videos on mental health practices, and all these young kids are just like, they're all lapping it up. And I think, oh my God, we were told to toughen up. And I would come home and be like, oh my God, Sarah was so horrible today. And Mum would be like, toughen up, you'll be right, rah, rah. Whereas now they've got access to all these amazing therapy videos and YouTubers and things like that, that are teaching them how to open up and talk about their feelings. And for boys, I think it's going to be a whole new generation of men that are coming through. I think there's a lot of bad things to it. There's also a lot of great things to it.
Yeah, I've been dipping my toes sort of reluctantly into the manosphere, trying to get my head around, like, the sort of Andrew Tate of it all. And you know, there are really disturbing, terrifying, very popular, you know, Instagram influencers, I guess, you know, YouTubers and guys on Instagram, just really toxic messages and just horrible. But at the same time, I've also been finding there's, like, it's the healthy boy movement, which is, like, guys who are reacting against that, who would be classed as soy boys. And, you know, I'm a proud soy boy. I eat meat, but I would be classed as a soy boy by the manosphere. But I think it is an interesting debate that has to happen, because I don't think, like, that sort of manosphere, old school traditional masculinity thing has been around forever, and it's probably been the prevalent, most dominant form of masculinity. But I think we are seeing more role models for younger guys, especially, like, as, you know, these influencers and YouTubers that are saying, no, you don't have to. There is not one form of masculinity. And it's funny too, because I was watching this one guy, you know, these two manosphere dudes having this really, like, crude discussion about why they don't go down on women, you know, and how it's gross and vaginas are gross and, you know, like, giving a blowjob's not a hassle. There's nothing disgusting about a penis. And I'm like, first of all, have you seen a penis? They are fucking off. Like,
look down, boys. Look down.
Really, like, take off the cognitive bias. I mean, speaking, we brought up Cassie, and I hope she doesn't mind me bringing up this, but she once gave me the best kind of analogy for this, because she was saying, look, all dicks are gross. Dicks are just gross. That's why dick pics and unsolicited dick pics are particularly, you know, unappealing. But she said, then you meet a guy that you like and it's the best dick in the world. And it's, I'm so like, true. Oh, okay, that makes sense to me.
It's so true. It's so wild because, yeah, I have this conversation all the time. I get sent a lot of dick pics.
Oh, my God.
And, like, I'm always going to look at them. I'm fascinated, but I find them quite gross. But same. But then I was dating a guy for ages and he sent me one and I did. I found it saucy. I was like, oh, yay, this is a bit exciting. But send them to a girl without any notice and bloody hell, they're very ugly.
Really ugly. They're not photogenic at all.
And no.
It's also too. So these guys were having this conversation and they were like, it was really interesting because if I, as an armchair psychologist, I'm hearing these two guys talk about how much they hate vaginas and I'm like, oh, you're gay. Like,
that's where my brain went.
Yeah, completely makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. They seem so repulsed by the idea mm-hmm. of cunnilingus. I'm like, oh, that, do you guys, are you guys aware of what's going on? Like, maybe you need to speak to one of your soy boy mates, someone who will listen to you, express mm-hmm. these emotions and give you some guidance to where your heart truly lies. Because to be that feverishly anti-woman and anti, like, female anatomy, I mean, where else can you go with that?
There's always an undercurrent to these guys, like the Andrew Tates and everything. There's always, if you dive deep, this anger towards women comes from somewhere. Like, there's a guy in America who he has 500,000 followers, YouTube followers, and every week he takes one of my articles and he dissects it. And that article might have taken me 15 minutes to write, and he'll spend 40 minutes on this YouTube video dissecting it, saying I'm going to die with cats and I'm a massive hussy. And I sit there going, I put less effort into writing that than you are. But it's really creepy because he's got this big, it looks like he's in his mother's basement. And he's got this big American flag and all these men write comments underneath, rah, 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 yeah, she's going to die with cats, rah, rah. And I look at him and he's this ugly, short little man. And I think, I never, because everyone goes, oh, isn't that horrible? Don't you get really upset? I go, no, because I look at him, one, it gives me great engagement for my articles. And they all come for me on Instagram, which also is great engagement for my Instagram. So, like, thanks. But I just find him a really sad, angry man. And I think, oh, you're that guy in high school who got rejected by women. And instead of, like, you know, maybe going to therapy or using healthy methods to get rid of your rage, you've chosen to just build this, like, you dedicated your life to this rage of hating women. And I just feel sad for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, I went to an all-boys school, and I would say, like, the chances of me turning out like that, even I was raised with six sisters, you know, my father died when I was quite young, I was very close with my mother, so I had all the strong female influences, but being surrounded by other men who echo the same sentiments, because that, I did have this attitude around girls as a teenager, that, like, I just didn't, like, they just annoyed me. They seemed too, like, emotional. I didn't, you know, I couldn't. And it was nothing to do with being rejected or whatever. It was just because you sort of are speaking into this feedback loop where, you know, you're just making stuff up about girls. That, like, you just, you're coming to these complex psychological conclusions that you're just guessing. And then your mate says the same thing. And it was funny because, and there's also the Catholic thing as well. Like, I had this idea that women didn't like sex, that it was something that they endured for our benefit. You know,
that's how we grow up.
And it was this really, and it wasn't until, like, I left high school and I went to university and suddenly, you know, I'm hanging out with girls as friends and, you know, and like, we met this group of girls at uni who were all staying together in this house and they just, like, they took me and three of my friends and, like, that was our sexual awakening. They just, I mean, if you reverse the genders, people would be like, oh, that was horrible. They took advantage of you. But, like, we were quite to go, like, after class, go around to this house. And, like, you know, that's, I lost my virginity there. And then, you know, like, and they were so confident, these girls, and also, like, but sensitive about it as well. Like, it was a really positive kind of experience. And it kind of really sort of made me go, oh, my God, like, where have I been for the last 4 years? Like, where's my head been? And, you know, that the idea of just single sex schools, I'm like, it's just a bad idea. Like, I understand, you know, there is sort of academic benefits to separating boys and girls because there's less distraction. But if you're going to do that, then I think you have to amp up the social interaction, because otherwise you get mates like that weirdo American guy. He's just, he's just festering away and he doesn't have the opportunity to meet real women and talk to real women, because some of the, you know, I see some of these Manosphere videos where they talk about women, they just want, you know, they just need compliments and they want a guy with money and blah, blah. And I'm like, maybe you're hanging around with the wrong girls. Like,
right?
And it's also like, women aren't this monolith where it's like, they're these, like, yeah, I'm sure there are women who are incredibly shallow or superficial or whatever. Fine. Don't go out with them. Don't date them. That's fine.
Avoid them.
Take them off the menu. But this idea that, like, all women are like this, I'm like, you just haven't met enough women, it sounds like.
Well, he's not in his basement. He's not in that little dark basement he lives in. But they're also so intimidated by women as well. Like, this is a shy guy who might be too scared to go and chat to women. So he's chosen the path of hating them. And it's like, man, what a therapist could do to him. Like, let a therapist get their hands on him and sort it out and his life will change. I think it's really, but it's that pack mentality as well. Like, he found other men who are exactly the same as him, who were happy to jump on board because that's an easier belief than looking deep into their souls and realizing that, you know,
well, it's also,
they have insecurities.
It's also that thing too of, like, even if you are a confident guy who can talk to women and stuff, this idea that a relationship, like, you know, you find a 10, you know, she doesn't want your money, you know, she's a great, you know, she wants to have kids and say, like, so it's every kind of like old school manosphere fantasy woman, right? But the idea that you enter into that relationship and then everything takes care of itself for the next like 50 years, you're fucking crazy. Like, relationships take work and they change over time and people change over time. And, you know, I just think as someone who has been in a relationship for 20 years now, like, you know, I've been married for 8 years, you know, in a relationship for 20, like, it's constant maintenance, you know. And I don't think that I could have found anyone different 20 years ago and it would have been smooth sailing, like, right up until, like, it doesn't exist. But, you know, there are these guys who are like, well, you just find that 10 who wants to be Susie Homemaker and keeps her hands off your cash, and then you don't have to worry about it. You're just going to have a bunch of beautiful babies and blah, blah, blah. No, mate, that's not
what she... Do they expect to be perfect as well? Like,
no, of course
they...
not. They're right? The men. Right? They don't have to be. Like, their
value
was not on.
They can go have sex with someone else, and like, they can spend all their money gambling. But she better be perfect. It's also that
gender inequality thing that I always find so weird. Like, you know, some dudes you'll catch up for a boys' weekend or, you know, whatever, and they're just so excited to be away from their partner, and the way they talk about them, I'm like, why are you with them? I mean, you know, I don't understand. Like, Gemma and I often work together, you know, and people are like, oh, I could never work with my partner. I'm like, that's bad. You're saying that as if it's like a good thing. That's bad. Like,
yes,
you should be looking for someone that you can do the most things possible with. I understand you don't have to work together and you shouldn't be in each other's pockets. And, you know, Gem's been overseas for 3 weeks, we'll be away for 4 weeks. That's good. But when you're together, you should be like, it's a team effort thing. I remember once working with a guy, and Jen was away shooting a commercial in the States. She's going to be away for 3 weeks. And he was like, oh man, aren't you worried about her? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, are you worried that she's going to cheat on you? And I'm like, hey, like, I would love to meet the dude who thinks he could walk up to my wife, drop a line. And like, if there's a dude out there who can drop a line on Jen, get her into bed, good fucking luck. It took me almost 6 months. So, yeah, you know,
bravo.
Yeah, bravo. Like, I'd doff my hat to you, sir, if you think that you're that good. But also this idea that you can't trust your partner, that, you know, like, admittedly, I've never been cheated on. And so maybe I'm a bit kind of naive to all this, but I also think that, and maybe this isn't like, I'm an egomaniac, but I think if someone was to cheat on me, I'm like, fuck you. Like, you just destroyed what we have. You just gave up. I was willing to, you know, give you everything. If you're just going to cheat on me because some dude fucking bought you a drink, then, you know, and that's maybe what these guys are missing. You know,
like, oh, completely. And it's interesting because I love hearing stories like yours where you have been married for 20 years, because I can't seem to stay in a relationship for 20 days. So I'm always like, how did you do it? But what it sounds like is you guys are best friends. Like, do you think at the core you genuinely just have to really like that person?
Yeah.
What's your secret?
I don't know if there's a secret. I mean, it's hard work. Like, it's funny, once there's this Bright Eyes song called First Day of My Life, and I remember hearing it on the radio, and it's like, it's such a beautiful, like, song. And there's a line in it where he says, I'd rather be working for a paycheck than trying to win the lottery, you know, talking about his girlfriend. And I got home and I said to Gem, I just heard the most romantic song, and I played it for her, and she's like, I'm not a fucking paycheck.
I'm the lottery. Wow. So and you still got married.
Yeah. So I think it is a balance between, like, yeah, you know, you've got to treat that person like they're the lottery, but you've got to be working for the paycheck. To be honest, I think we are lucky in the sense that, you know, our personal interests and our professional interests kind of align, but not in a way that is we're treading on each other's toes. Like, we have the same group of friends, but we also have separate friends within that group. Mm. So, you know, we can hang out together or we can hang out separately. Our careers, we both work in film and TV. Sometimes we work together, sometimes we don't. I travel for work, she travels for work, you know. And so we're lucky in that way, because I imagine it would be hard if, you know, she worked like an office job and, you know, I was going off to shoot something or whatever, and she wouldn't really understand the world I work in, or, you know, sometimes being an actor is a weird job and, you know, you're kissing people who aren't your partner and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, there is a lot of kind of just luck in that relationship. But I do think when we first got together, it was a long distance relationship. So, you know, we sort of had hooked up in Sydney and where I was living, but she was in Melbourne. And then she went back to Melbourne for like 4 or 5 months. And we were both single and we have both had complete, you know, freedom to do whatever we wanted. But I just really liked her. And so we'd talk most nights and we'd talk for hours on the phone. And I think that set the groundwork for what was to come because we didn't have the physical, you know, connection.
Which get to know each other.
Yeah, which can be misleading, you know, because, you know, I've had past relationships where it is, you know, like, it starts off gangbusters, but then it quickly dissipates. And that is the other thing is like, you know, it can't be one thing. It's got to, you've got to sort of have all these boxes ticked at different times or at the same time. And so the other thing was she didn't need me. And, you know, like it was kind of really, really a turn on. Just like she broke up with me like so many times in that initial phase, like she just was not interested. And I just had this real sense of, because prior to her, I'd been single for a long time. And I actually was like, oh, well, maybe this is, you know, maybe that's where I'm just going to be a guy who, you know, is single. And I was cool with that. Like I don't have any, you know, issues with, I don't believe you have to have a family or kids or a partner or whatever, you know, just do you. But there was something different about that. And I think a lot of it was just that, you know, intellectual, emotional connection. And it's not to say we haven't had like ups and downs, like all couples have been together that long. But I do think respect is like the number one thing, you know, like there's been occasion where we've spoken to each other disrespectfully and it doesn't fly, you know, like it's just, you can't be in a relationship with someone who doesn't value you or condescends or, you know, and I can be incredibly emotional. Like I would say maybe she's got a...
You are such an actor.
Yeah, totally. But I'm getting better at sort of, you know, understanding that, you know, what my triggers are and you know, now that I'm a dad too, because that's a whole different set of pressures and anxieties that you feel when you've got a kid in the mix. But if anything, I think that foundation then helps, you know, when you start bringing kids in, because it's like, I see her with our daughter and it's like, oh my God, she's amazing. Like she just, you know, she just has this connection. And there, I do think that mothers and children, you know, especially mothers and daughters, there is this, you know, it's like just this very special bond. It's a chemical connection. And then as the dad, you lumber in and you try and like, you know, comfort or do something that doesn't have the same effect. But from that, you do learn lessons about just, guys like to fix, you know, when there's an issue, there's a problem, we like, okay, what action can I take to fix this in the fastest possible way? Sometimes that's not what's needed. It's just like, listen, just be present. Just, you know, let that child cry, you know, give it some comfort. Don't fix the problem. And then, you know, as an adult relationships, it's the same thing as well. You know, sometimes you just want to be listened to. You don't want solutions. You don't want things will be okay. Just listen to me. Just hear things out.
Yeah, I hear that in I read a lot of dating books and follow all the, you know, YouTubers and stuff like that, and they say the same thing. They say the best thing a man can say to a woman is when she comes in and she's in a real tiz, you've got to say, do you want my advice or do you want me to listen while you vent? And 9 out of 10 times a woman will say, I just need to vent for a hot second. And they say that's I think it was Iris Perel, I can't remember her name. She's this famous relationship psychologist, really good at quoting. But I'm pretty sure she said that. She's like, men do go into fix it mode, but women just want to be heard. And she said that's a game changer when guys start asking that question, like, because it's all with a good heart. You want to fix things.
It's being comfortable sitting with feelings of distress, you know, like that's why. You know, I had real anxiety around, I mean, I have anxiety in general.
Welcome to the anxiety club.
I had anxiety leading into childbirth because I'm like, you know, I don't know how I'm going to go seeing my wife in distress, you know, this very physically demanding. And like, so I went back into therapy to prep for it. And it was funny.
I love that. That's so healthy.
Because I was talking to my psychologist about it. I was like, you know, I'm just like the idea of seeing her screaming. And he's like, so how many childbirths have you witnessed? And I'm like, none. But, you know, I've seen movies. And it's like, yeah, hang on. He said, you're an actor, right? I'm like, yeah. And it's like, so you know in movies and TVs, they show you the most dramatic, you know, version of an event
to make it
exciting. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, childbirth can be quite like, you know, there's peaks and troughs. It can be quite calm and it can be quite stressful. And it was just this kind of simple, like, mental adjustment I had to make. And then, you know, watching her go through that, you know, it was a, you know, knock on wood and, you know, we were very lucky. It was a very complication-free labor. Mm. She didn't have any drugs or anything, about 14 hours.
Bravo.
Pretty amazing. But watching her, like my expectation of what she was going to go through was like, oh my God, like she's just in agony and there's nothing I can do. But it wasn't like that at all. It was like, the analogy I use is, it was like Jen was competing at the Olympics in weightlifting. And it was incredibly physically taxing. And there was times you're like, oh my God, how is she going to do it? But you also had this confidence that she's a trained athlete and she's going to get through it. So more than anything, it was like I had ringside seats for this kind of incredible. I mean, at one point, you know, she'd been sort of laboring for like 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, we had a doula with us because we don't have any grandparents or anything. We're no support like that. So we had this doula and she was so great at sort of, you know, calming everything down. Cause I'm like, do we go to the hospital now? It's like time to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, no, no. And Jim was like, oh, I'm so exhausted. I just want to rest. And so she sort of flopped on the couch and the doula said, it's okay, Jem, you know, it's your first child. Sometimes it can take up to 48 hours. And Jem's like, fuck that. So she gets up and starts marching up and down the hallway and doing these like power squats, like, get out of me, you know. And
the door, it's all just the carries.
Yeah. So the door just turned to me and said, that's amazing. She's got like perfect, like there's women in, you know, Africa, that's like how they do standing childbirth, holding onto a tree. Jem's like got power stance going on right now.
Yeah, I've seen that video. Oh my God, I remember seeing a video of the African woman doing that. And I was like, oh, she made that look so easy.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I find childbirth so petrifying. So I like hearing stories like that because you do, you're so right. You only hear the stories of, I got stuck for 48 hours and then I left it too late to take the medication and this. We do. We only hear the scary stories. But the, yeah, you're right. My mom was the same. I was 3 weeks early and she goes, you were out within 20 minutes. I'm like, okay, we need more stories like that.
Wow,
we
really?
Need to share. Yeah. Yeah. My brothers were different. They're a punish, so that makes sense.
You just couldn't wait. You just had to, I mean, 3 weeks early and out like in 20 minutes, you just, Jana just had to take the world on. I've got things to post.
And nothing has changed. Saucy Secrets Monday is coming. I love what you said, though. I find it really interesting what you said about how you were long distance and so you had to get to know each other. And I was thinking about that with lockdown because there's been so many successful couples that have come out of lockdown because they all matched on Bumble. And instead of, you know, matching and then having those cheeky one-night stands and then swiping on the next person, everyone was forced to stop and date old school, where they, you know, you had to go for walks in the park or you had to do video dates and things like that. And I think so many proper relationships came out of lockdown because they kind of did what you did. You had to get to know each other before you saw each other naked. It's good.
Well, I just can't imagine, like I often think about, geez, if I had to, 20 years out of the game, if I had to re-enter the dating market, there was no apps or anything like that. Like I would just, part of me thinks I just wouldn't try. Like I just, I'm single now. Like, yeah. I mean, alone,
well,
not
I
single.
Die
like,
alone.
Like it seems so weird and scary. I used to love, when I was on set, the makeup girls, there's a bunch of them that were on Tinder at the time. And I was like, what's this thing? And they're showing me and they're swiping and I'm like, oh, wow, this is so much fun. And I used to like get really excited for lunch break because I'd sit down with the makeup girls and I'd go, not him, him. No, not him. No, he looks weird. Not. And then I said to Jem, I said, look, can we get Tinder? I'm not looking, but I think it's fun. Maybe on a Friday night we can just like swipe left to see who we want to like date or not just for fun. And she's like, absolutely not.
Oh, God. And then you got divorced.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, that was years ago. And then, you know, I sort of have read some of the stuff that you've written about, and, you know, like it can be so dicey, and the genie's out of the bottle, right? Like, it's just convenient. You know, I'm sure there's real benefits to it. I'm sure there's long-term relationships that have come out of apps, but do you lose something in that seeding of the relationship, you know, because it's basically a sales pitch, right? Like, this is completely me looking my best. These are the things I like, you know, but ultimately you still have to cross that hurdle of, oh, this is me in real life. This is me.
And it's never the same.
Is it never the same?
Never.
Has anyone exceeded your expectations? Like, you've. Yes. Okay.
And it's always the ones who have shit profiles. ones that put so much effort into their profiles. And you might have the best text banter and you're like, oh, this guy is wild. Or you make up stories based off their pictures. Like, there was this one guy who had lots of pictures of him at festivals. And I like extroverts. I like the loudest one in the room. And he looked so fun. So in my head, and this is on me as well, I went, okay, so he's this fun party animal, crazy guy that goes to parties in wacky outfits. And I got to the date and he was this nervous wreck and he couldn't say anything and he was like a real kind of quiet, chilled guy. And I was like, that's on me, because I'm in my head.
You created this fantasy.
Totally. They can never live up to it, ever. But I just think I always find it fascinating because I've got a lot of friends now, also post-pandemic, who are getting divorced. And I've got one friend in particular, and he just can't wrap his head around it. He met his wife at high school. They used to talk on the phone every night, like physically have to talk to the parents and be like, hi, is Jenny there? Can I talk to her?
Oh, the most terrifying phone call a teenager ever had to make. Just get through the gatekeeper to get to the girl that you want to talk to, or boy.
Always. And I used to tell my brothers, tell Michael I'm not here. Like, my brothers used to break up with boys. It was horrible. I know, I was a bit of a bitch. and so, but now you just kind of swipe left, right, go on one date, maybe have sex with them. You're bored because you haven't got to know them properly. And you're on to the next person. Like, there's such a thing as having too many options. And he loved it when he first got into the dating game. He was kind of rebounding and he's like, oh, these women. And then he started going broke because it's really expensive dating, going on a million first dates.
Especially in Sydney, my God.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's so expensive. And then, you know, he tapped out for like 6 months in the end because he was like, it was so exciting and then it was so horrible.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I would imagine. Well, have you seen this that series on Disney, Fleischman? What's it? Fleischman's in Trouble, or the Jesse Eisenberg one?
Yes, I've seen the trailer. Everyone's raving about it.
Yeah, and I've seen the first three episodes, but it's exactly that. It's a guy who's gone through a messy divorce, and, you know, it was a girl he met in college, and now he's like in his mid-30s, and he is just having like so much sex and new girls all the time, and but there is this sort of sense of hollowness to it.
Oh, that's exactly what it is.
This idea that it's so on tap and it's so easy. And then this idea of like, well, what are you even working towards? Because, I mean, I don't know. Like, I, and again, I'm not in this world at all. And it's not, I'm passing judgment, but I just wonder, like, relationships that come out of, you know, shared interests, you know, either someone that you meet because you go to the like a gym or like a social catch-up or whatever, or work relationships within certain confines, and when there's no power imbalance, you know what I'm talking about.
No, China. That's but you know like what I mean. So many. I've never done that, Charlie. That sounds wild. no, but it's true. Like, so many people marry people they worked with because that's how you meet.
My brother.
Oh, really? Yeah. My mum and stepdad, they had a cheeky affair. It's all very illicit but exciting. She was a nurse. He was a doctor. It's so cliche.
Oh, it's so hot.
Yeah, I know. It was. I always joke. I say to them, did you fall in love? Because she was an operating nurse. So they'll like cut open bodies.
Over like an open chest, open heart surgery.
Was it
or
cardiac
something?
Surgery Did that I, you yeah. fell in love?
Like? Eyes met over an exposed rib cage.
Boom, 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 boom. Over a heart. Yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Pass the scalpel, I love you. Like, yeah. But that's how people meet. And it totally makes sense that people fall in love at work because you see each other at your best and worst, right? Like, you see them when shit hits the fan and you get to see how they react to stress. And sometimes that can be sexy. I love a shouter, which is probably something I need to go to therapy for. But it's true. Like, I love meeting people out in the wild. And I've been off the apps for about 6 months. And I was worried. I was like, I'm not going to meet anyone because no one chats each other up anymore. But can I say to anyone single at the moment, give yourself a break off the apps, because you do. You meet them through your friendship group or at a dinner party, or you're right, at the gym. And it's so much nicer to meet people in real life and to actually get to know them a little bit before you go on a date rather than just throw yourself
so
in a date.
So as a single girl, what's some etiquette though? Like, just say, you know, you are at the gym or no, a place that is not like, you know, supermarket, whatever, that's not a dating environment. Like, I've always sort of felt like it's inappropriate to approach someone in an area where they're like, you don't want to ambush someone, you know, unless you are patient and can play the long game. So you say hi one day, the next week, a bit more of a conversation, week three, a bit more of a conversation. And then by week four, you've got a banter and you're like, hey, you know, do you want to grab a drink or something?
That's exactly it.
Most guys don't have that kind of patience. It's like, hi, here's my number. You know, whatever
I
it
really
is.
Like you.
Yeah. Like,
but you do. You answered exactly how I was going to answer it. You have to play the slow game. Don't look thirsty. If you look thirsty, it's all over Red Rover, unless you're Brad Pitt, and then you can look as thirsty at me as you like. But I think you have to do that. Don't go all in. It does. People find it off-putting. I had a guy, I was at Kmart, not yesterday, the day before, and every aisle I went down, he was there. And that's the problem. It came across as weird, and he wasn't like a weird. He was a normal looking guy, but it just I felt like
oh,
he
we
was
get
like
that going for yeah, it. He was yeah. normal looking.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, didn't give off serial killer vibes.
Okay. Yeah.
Apparently, that's who you need to be.
There's
worried
no
about.
Podcast series being created about him. Good, good.
Well, not yet. But he. But he just, I could feel, I was like, oh, I feel like this guy is about to approach me, but he's doing it really, really awkwardly. And even when I got to the checkout, he was there. And then I didn't really think anything of it, went home. I was on Instagram that night and I look in my DMs because I love seeing what random messages I'm going to get. And I got a message of him saying, oh my God, I feel like I stalked you around Kmart. I just really wanted to come up and say hello, but I was too scared. Anyway, I thought I'd slide into your DMs and do it this way instead. And I was like, yeah, that's where you went wrong. Like,
did you tell him that?
No, I didn't. I didn't write back. I didn't engage because he's not for me. And that's a problem. He put me off because he was too thirsty. So first of all, don't look thirsty.
My ex-girlfriend, I remember she was waitressing at this cafe and there was like building works happening a few doors down, and she went to her car and there was a note under her, like, you know, a windscreen wiper. And it was this really heartfelt note about like, hi, you know, I've been watching you, which is a bad start. And, you know, I think you're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. And if you could be willing to take a chance on me, blah, 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 blah. And she was like, and she was very sweet, you know, and she didn't, her concern was like, oh, I don't want, you know, I don't want to let this guy down gently. I don't want to make him feel like I've let him on. I'm like, you haven't done anything. You've just been living your life. He's created this narrative around you. I said, if anything, like, this is completely inappropriate. Like, he's putting pressure on you or guilting you into giving him a chance. Like, you don't owe him anything. But I was also like, what is this guy's, like, how does he, has he gamed this in his head? Like, how do you think this is going to go down? Do you think that she's just going to call you up and go, oh my God, I was waiting for a creepy anonymous letter to be left under my windscreen wiper?
I found you. No, I think it's exactly what you said. Like, if he had come into the cafe and had a bit of banter with her and then come in the next day and then form a friendship slowly, slowly, slowly. And then when you feel comfortable enough, say, oh, that band you were talking about, let's go see them. Or, hey, would you be up for a drink? Or I think you have to play the long game in real life. Or the other thing you can do is, like, if you meet them at a dinner party through a friend, I think you should always scope them out through the friend. Use the friend. Say, can you go sus if they might be interested? And then there's not that pressure. I hate people who come straight up to you and you're like, do you want to go for a drink? Because women, we're too nice. We go, okay. And then we're like, shit, we don't want to.
How do I get out of this?
Yeah.
I mean, I think too, like, neutral ground, like, group situations are better, you know, like,
always.
Where it's, you know, so you can, because that, you know, if it's a, like, a lunch or a party or a get together, whatever, barbecue, lots of people are talking, there's lots of chances. So if there's someone that, I'm like, why am I giving the fucking dating advice?
This is ridiculous. I love it. No, I'm actually in a relationship.
Jem loves setting people up. Like, it's her little kind of thing. She loves being Cupid. And her thing is always, I'll just create an event, you know, where groups come together, and that way they can interact without there being this pressure of one-on-one or whatever.
And dream.
Naturally, but you do that a couple of times, two or three times. Oh, we're having dinner here, and oh, we're going to the beach. Oh, do you want to invite so-and-so? And I think that that more or less, you know, works. I do remember the one time, you know, when I was single, I went on a blind date. Someone did that reverse letter drop to me. Except they had gone up to one of my coworkers and said, hey, that guy, blah, 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 could you just give him my number? And so I remember I sort of came back from my shift, my lunch break, and they're like, oh, this girl. And I was like, oh, okay, was she attractive? And like, oh, yeah, she's super attractive. And I said, did she seem cool or was she weird? And they're like, oh, no, she seemed really cool. She's English. And I was like, oh. I said, I'm putting a lot of faith in you guys.
Yeah, seriously.
I'll give it a shot.
Seriously.
So I called her and we met up and she was lovely. But no chemistry, like, absolutely, you know, there was nothing wrong. It just was like, oh, we were running out of things to talk about within half an hour. And it sort of got to the point where I was like, this is a bad setting for a date because there's no excitement. Like, if anything, I felt like duty bound or some weird, and then I felt like, oh, I I'm the one who took up the offer. So therefore, you know, I should stick it out.
Oh, I get it. And that's what every Tinder date is. That's what every Bumble date is. And it's the same. And it's like, well, they bought me a drink. Like, am I expected not to put out? I got a cheap
But just to stick out
the date. Like, that is the problem with these blind dates. You feel pressure. And you're so right. If it is the barbecue, it's organic. And an organic fix-up is the dream. And the best. But yeah, I don't think it's going to happen overnight. I always question, like, there's those things at the moment. There's an article the other day that said people are hanging around supermarkets now. And if you have a bunch of bananas in your cart, it means you're single. And
that's been around for ages.
I've had too. But I was like, what if someone just genuinely wants to buy bananas? Are they putting themselves out there as single when they're not, by accident? I don't believe that people get picked up at supermarkets as much as we hear they do. Like, I don't think it's common. But yeah, the long game and
you've got
friends.
To also got to think about, like, if you do end up together and you have kids, like, what story are you gonna tell about how mum and dad met? We met in the produce aisle. Your mum was squeezing a watermelon and it turned me on.
So. Yeah. I went up to her and said, you can squeeze my watermelon.
Yeah, well, if you're expecting a watermelon, it's more of a kumquat. So.
Exactly. Well, your dad was a bit of a creep and I really fell for it. No, I love mad stories. Like, I love the fact that Mum and Pete met, you know, cutting open bodies and fixing hearts and broken bones and things like that. But I tell you what, there's a lot of people out there who are getting married now who met on Tinder and Bumble and things like that. So.
Well, it's interesting you sort of say that because you're right. Like, that's a really interesting, unique story. Yet what dating apps are kind of doing is funneling everyone through the one door of interaction and sort of robbing people of those chance encounters, those weird seeding of a relationship. Like, that's not going to happen if we're all just kind of signing up for this very prescribed way of meeting where you post 7 photos, you write a bio, you swipe left, you swipe right. How do you have those kind of, like, how does a rom-com exist in that world where there's a meet cute moment, you know, you both walk dogs at the same time or blah, 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 you know, whatever it is.
Exactly. And I think you can use them. Like I was thinking, or I was like, who was the last person I went on a date with? And it was someone who slid into my DMs on Instagram, but I had met him already. So we had our meet cute. And so I think Instagram is a good way because it's like, well, if you're a little bit too intimidated to ask someone out when you meet, I don't mind the sliding into the DMs and being like, hey, it was so great to meet you. Really enjoyed it. We should go for a drink sometime. So you've had your meet cute and then you've backed it up that way instead of kind of putting them on the spot when
that's
you meet
not,
them.
I followed you around the supermarket like a weirdo, staring at you in the vitamin aisle.
And it's so embarrassing. Like the Kmart guy, I literally was like, shit, what was I buying? Like it was not a sexy trip. I was buying dog toys and dog biscuits for my dog. And I bought a really ugly candle. And I was like, no, this is not how I meet my guy. He didn't even have a dog. What is he doing in the dog aisle? Oh, the whole thing was just bad, bad, bad. Meet them first and then slide into their DMs.
Yeah. Don't be a creep first, I think is the message we can take from this podcast.
Yep. Don't be
Jana,
thirsty.
So great to have you on the show. We'd love to get you back at some time. I mean, I feel like I've exhausted all my dating chat, but maybe if I come across some of your weird saucy secrets, we have enough fuel for another podcast.
Oh my God. I'll start collating them.
Where can people find you online?
So Instagram, Jana_Hocking. I also write for news.com, Daily Mail, New York Post. So just Google my name. You'll find some horrific dating story on there somewhere.
And the saucy secrets, you ask for confessions on a Sunday night and they go up Monday. Is that right?
Yes, please give me some. You'd think I'd be running out of secrets by now, but I'm not. So keep them coming.
Nah. It's great. It's a very entertaining way to spend your Monday evening. Take it from me. Jana, thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll speak to you next time.
Thanks, Charlie.
Listener.